Annie liked most of what she'd seen of Texas so far, aside from the Diaz incidents. The Spanish language was a mystery to her, but she had felt an immediate openness and kinship with the Moreno family because of Andrew. She had been a little frustrated by her inability to talk to them without Andrew or Zaragoza to interpret. She'd been given to understand that without the kind and, for the Moreno family, dangerous help by the old Senora Moreno, her brother Michael would probably have died 15 years ago. She had tried to express her gratitude, but she doubted that the translation had carried the true depth of her feeling. And she had felt that she could have built a solid friendship with the girl Juanita if they'd only been able to communicate better. Perhaps things would go easier with Andrew's wife Petra. Andrew said she had acquired a fair command of English. Annie suspected that James had not been forthright when she asked him what Andrew and Zaragoza were talking about. She had heard things, just enough to intrigue but not enough to know their full import, about difficulties between the American colonists and the Mexican authorities, and speculations about their implications for the future. She made up her mind that as time permitted, she was going to learn Spanish from Petra and Marie. Be damned if she was going to remain shut out of things just because she didn't understand the language. The trek westward from San Felipe out to the new land took much longer than was really necessary. Andrew seemed to know every settler for miles on either side of the trail, and a stop at each place was made mandatory by the eager hospitality which isolation had instilled in these Texas pioneers. It was a breach of etiquette, almost a cruelty, to pass by a place without stopping for at least a howdy, a chance for the women folk to learn what was new back in the old states, time for the men folk to spit and whittle and talk some politics. Frank seemed especially to enjoy it, for he had always been one to whom no man remained a stranger long, and no woman if she was comely, though being married to Hope had tamed that aspect of his personality somewhat. Annie found the settlers eager to see more of their own kind moving in around them. She mentally calculated that if she lived up to every return visit she had promised the women along the way, she'd spend much of the summer at it. Zaragoza left them at the first stop they made beyond San Felipe. He was eager to pick up his son and return to his family and duties at Bar. He would let Michael, Marie, and Petra know the wagons were coming. Annie could see that Andrew genuinely regretted seeing him go. Andrew reined in beside Annie's wagon and pointed toward a long log structure to the left of the road.
Well, that's the Willett farm. I promise you this is the last place we stop, but Widow Willett wouldn't forgive us if we passed her by.
Widder? Well, what happened to her husband?
An Indian raid. But that was about 5 years ago. Been mighty little Indian trouble in this colony for a long time.
You're wishing I hadn't come.
Yeah, I never said that. I got a family and so has Michael. If we didn't feel like it was safe, they wouldn't be here.
I never did encourage Annie to come. I was against it from the start.
I'm glad she did. She'll be good company for Petra and Marie. As for me and Michael, she's our baby sister.
Been a long time since she was a baby. Back home, they was already figuring her for an old maid.
I think it's a little early to be calling her such a thing. She's just now coming to full bloom.
Mrs. Willard reminded Annie a little of Mother Moreno, though she was several years younger and much lighter of skin. Whatever the nightmare of losing her husband had been, she had long since made peace with the world. She had her children about her and a couple of small grandchildren from her son Zeb and a willowy young woman called Birdie. Mrs. Willett talked at length about their plans for expanding the farm, their bright hopes for the future.
You don't mind living here in a different country under a foreign government and people who talk a language you can't understand?
Annie had determined that Mrs. Willett didn't speak Spanish. She had already learned that most American settlers here didn't.
Lord, child, no. Our government is in San Felipe, and it's American. Out here, we don't often see a Mexican soldier or anybody from the Mexican government. For all you can tell, we're the same as back in Kentucky, only we got a lot more land than we'd have ever got back yonder. The living's been pretty good, all in all.
You wouldn't want to go back to Kentucky?
Lord, no, not and leave all this. This is home now. I finished raising up my young'uns here and had two grandbabies born on this place. I got a husband buried out yonder. This is our home, bought and paid for with blood, and we wouldn't leave it for nothing nor nobody.
Not even if Mexico took a notion to turn you out?
Oh, they wouldn't try. There's enough of us in Texas already to whip them plumb to Mexico City, and they know it. Anyway, nothing like that is fixing to happen. They've gone to a right smart of trouble setting up these colonies. There's no reason they'd want to move us now. One thing I can't understand is why an unattached young lady would come out here. Women with their husbands, sure, but you?
My brothers are out here, and I hadn't seen them in most 10 years. I've begun to feel like I might never see them again if I didn't come. And then there's James. James means well, but in some respects he's not full grown yet. He's got a way of falling into trouble that's over his head if somebody's not standing there to pull him back out of it.
Annie had long suspected that James was trying to emulate their older brother, Michael. Going by a memory that was perhaps more creative than it should be, he would try to decide what Michael would do under similar circumstances and then act accordingly. He had it set in his mind that Michael was never afraid of anything and would never brook insult or injustice. That belief had carried James into many a fight, sometimes at odds that ensured his losing in a big way. His wounds would heal, and he was always ready for the next fight. For a smart boy, he seemed almighty slow at learning certain lessons. Beyond her strong desire to see Michael and Andrew, Annie had made this trip in the hope that she might keep somebody from killing James before he finally matured enough not to attack bears with a willow switch. She couldn't depend upon Cousin Frank to do it. He had a family and problems enough of his own. She suspected her mother had sensed the same thing, for Patience had put up little opposition when Annie had announced her intention of going to Texas with James and Frank's family. If anything, she had seemed almost grateful.
The key to handling your little brother is to make him think everything is his idea and not yours. Don't try to boss him, or he'll rebel.
That part of her mother's advice Annie had not been able to take very well. It was not in her nature to be devious. When something came into her head, she spoke it straight out. In short, she herself was a lot like James. She was Mordecai Lewis's daughter.
A pretty young woman like you, it's hard for me to imagine that you didn't have a lot of willing young bucks pressing for your hand back home. I doubt that you're single for lack of opportunity.
There was opportunity, all right, but nobody I could see living a long life with. Most of them couldn't talk about anything except corn, chickens, and cows. They hadn't been anywhere and didn't want to go anywhere. I wanted to see something before I got myself hemmed inside of a field fence.
I expect you've seen a right smart on this trip.
I didn't know the country was so big.
It is. There's a lot more of it yet to see. Get your brothers to take you to Bar sometime. It's like another part of the world.
Much as Annie enjoyed the company of Mrs. Willett, her daughter-in-law, and the two babies, she itched to be back on the wagon and making the final few miles to the place that would be her home, where she would finally see Michael again after all these years. She tried to picture how her brother would look, for she had only memory to go by, and imagination. Andrew's appearance had given her some idea. The heritage of Mordecai Lewis had always shown strongly in Michael and Andrew, as it showed now in James. She loved all her brothers, but Michael had always been special, for in a way he had been her father's image. She had always clung tightly to Mordecai, and after his death, she had clung to Michael. Texas had taken Michael from her. Now, Texas would give him back. Andrew had told her the trail would lead by Michael's place first, so she knew when the wagons topped a small hill that the double log cabin she saw down toward the river was the place where her brother had made a home. From the distance, it looked much like the Tennessee farm where the family had lived during the final years of Mordecai's life. Consciously or unconsciously, Michael had probably copied that pattern when he built the cabin, the barn and sheds, and the livestock pens. Even the pole-fenced field lay in much the same relationship to the cabin as the old field had done back home, except that this one had more open country around it. The only deep woods were along the rivers. She saw a man working in the field, following an ox and a plow. A boy walked along behind him, dropping seeds into the freshly turned rows. The boy stopped suddenly, seeing the wagons. He pointed, and the man halted the ox to look up the slope. Though the distance was considerable, Annie knew instinctively that this was Michael, the lost brother she had come so far to find again. She felt tears well up and spill down her cheeks, wet and warm. Blinking them away, she saw that Michael was taking the ox up to the shed while the boy ran toward the cabin. By the time the wagons made their way around the field, Michael had turned the ox loose and stood waiting in front of the log house. Beside him were the boy and two women, as well as three smaller children. Andrew set his horse into a lope and hurried ahead of the wagons. He stepped down from the saddle and took one of the women into his arms. That, Annie knew, would be Petra. The other must be Michael's wife, daughter of the Natchitoches Villarays. James couldn't wait for the slow-moving wagons. He raced ahead, dismounting, throw his arms around Michael. He received a hug from each of the two women in turn, looking a little awkward about it. Michael strode out to meet the wagon as Annie drew the team to a stop. She tried to get a good look at him, but could hardly see through the second rush of tears.
Annie, my little Annie, come let me help you down.
Annie trembled so that she almost fell as she started to climb down on the wagon wheel.
Go, girl!
Michael caught her in strong arms and pulled her against his lean, tall frame, holding her for a minute without a word. Whatever the hardships, whatever the frustrations of the long trip had been, they were as nothing now. She clung to him as she had clung to him on their parting a long time ago, trying not to cry but unable to help herself.
It's all right. You're home now.
Annie felt it as she had not felt it in a long, long time. Not since the family had left Mordecai Lewis's old log cabin home to move in with Uncle Benjamin on his much bigger farm. This was a different land, far distant from any she had ever known. But somehow she felt that Michael was right. She was at home.
There's family here I want you to meet.
Michael introduced her first to Marie, a slightly built young woman with the largest, darkest eyes Annie thought she had ever seen, and a smile that left no doubt why Michael had fallen in love with her.
This lady gave me life when I thought I'd lost it.
Annie embraced Marie.
Oh, for that I've loved you for 15 years. It is good to finally see and touch you.
Annie pulled back a little. She had met others of the Villeray family in Louisiana, and she thought she could see a little of their look in Marie's face. It was the eyes that struck her most, that she knew must have struck Michael.
All of us Lewises are eternally grateful to you, Marie.
Whatever I did it because I loved Michael. I would do it all again.
Let's hope you never have to, that none of us ever have to.
Annie met young Mordecai, who already bore some of the marks of his Lewis name.
You're a fine-looking young man. You do your granddaddy proud.
Annie met the small girl named Angeline and started to ask where the baby was, then suddenly remembered a letter telling that Michael and Marie had lost it. It had seemed unreal to Annie at the time she had received word to have lost a little niece she had never seen. It was real now. She came then to Andrew's Petra and their two young ones.
I met your mother and your brothers a few days ago, and your sister Juanita.
It is good. You like them, I hope?
Very much. And I love you too, Petra. You and your little ones. Everybody! We're all gonna be a family.
Annie watched Frank and Hope and their boys gather around to be introduced one by one, and she felt a warm glow rise from within. Yes, she was home. Tennessee was in the past. This was Texas. It was now, and it was home. She had a strong feeling that it would be home for as long as she lived. Marie and Petra had started supper. Annie pitched in to help, despite their protests that she was company and should rest after the long trip.
I'm not company. I'm family.
She listened, she asked questions, she tried to study her two sisters-in-law for some idea of who they were as individuals. She had quickly seen the Villeray features in Marie, and Petra was a slightly older version of the girl Juanita Moreno. Marie was darker in complexion than the women Annie was used to in Tennessee, and Petra was a little darker even than Marie. Marie's English was better, tinged though it was with Louisiana French. Petra struggled to make herself understood, and Annie resolved to try never to smile when Petra's words came out backward. One might laugh with family, but never at them. In the course of the talk, Petra mentioned that her milk cow had disappeared shortly after Andrew had left to try to find Annie and James and the rest. Michael and Mordecai had hunted for her, but had had no luck. For a cow to stray was not strange under ordinary circumstances, but this one had a calf kept penned up behind the shed. It was unusual for one to go off far and leave a calf behind. Upon hearing the dog, curiosity took her to the door where she stood with a dish-drying cloth folded over her arm. Out beyond the dog run, she saw a man approaching on horseback. She stepped outside, shading her eyes with her hand and looking around to see where the Lewis men had gone. She saw Michael and Andrew walking up from the pens, James and Frank trailing along behind them. The man reached the cabin before them. He sat on the horse, staring at Annie. Much of his face was covered by a dark beard, but his eyes looked friendly. And they looked familiar, though Annie could think of no reason she should know him.
I don't believe I know you, ma'am, but by the look of you, I bet this horse and saddle that you're Lewis.
I'm Annie Lewis. Michael and Andrew are my brothers.
Come all the way from Tennessee? That explains the wagons, then. There's a bunch of you, I'd surmise, judging by the load them wagons is carrying.
My brother James, my cousin Frank, and his family.
Annie was troubled by the familiar look about him and her inability to place a name to him. She was troubled, too, by the way he stared at her, as if he were looking through her eyes and into every thought that lay behind them.
I'm Isaac Blackwood.
Blackwood. She had all but forgotten that three of the Blackwood brothers had moved to Texas and had settled near Michael and Andrew, to her own brother's great disgust. They had left plenty of trouble making kin behind in Tennessee, however, and she had known them well enough, too well. When a Blackwood came around, you counted your fingers lest you come up short. She wondered now why she'd not recognized him as a Blackwood. The look was there, plain enough to see now that she knew who he was.
You're a mighty handsome lady, Miss Annie Lewis.
The Lewis men back home would not long tolerate forward behavior by a Blackwood toward one of their womenfolk. But this was Texas, and perhaps things were different. Moreover, Annie doubted that Isaac meant to take liberty. He was just speaking what had come into his mind, and she accepted it as a compliment. Andrew and Michael were near enough to have heard, but they didn't challenge the man directly. Michael only stared at him, no welcome in his eyes. Andrew nodded civilly.
Andrew?
Isaac.
Isaac silently studied the other two Lewis men, James and Frank. He knew both from back in Tennessee, though James had been but a boy when Isaac and his brothers had left there.
Welcome to Texas.
Howdy, Isaac.
Andrew, you missing a milk cow?
So my wife just told me.
I brought her back. Left her at your place just a while ago.
Where was she, Isaac?
Over on our side of the river.
Reckon how she come to be on your side of the river?
I couldn't tell you about that. I just fetched her home. And now I'll be bidding you all a good day. I'll be missing my supper.
Isaac's gaze went back to Annie. He touched fingers to the floppy brim of an old hat that once had been white.
Like I said, ma'am, welcome to Texas. Mighty welcome.
He sure looks like all them other Blackwoods to me. But if he stole the cow, how come him to bring her back?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been Isaac that stole her, James. It was Finnis and Luke, if anybody. Notice his knuckles? They was bruised and beat up some. I bet you he had to fight Luke to get this cow and fetch her home.
Why would he do that? One Blackwood fought another to return something to a Lewis. Don't sound like the Blackwoods we know back home.
Well, Isaac's no saint, but he's better than the others. If he could get away from his brothers, he could probably make himself into a middling decent man.
Annie remembered the way the man's eyes had softened when he looked at her. Maybe Isaac Blackwood was already a middling decent man, and nobody had noticed it.
He's missing his supper for fetching the cow home. Couldn't y'all have invited him to stay and eat with us?
Michael looked at her as if she'd lost her mind. It It was full dark by the time Isaac Blackwood reached the homestead he shared with his brothers and Finnis's fat wife, Nellie. The oldest boy was out in the yard chucking rocks at a stray cat.
I wouldn't be doing that, young'un. Them cats keep the mice and rats away.
The boy was about 4. It always bothered Isaac, trying to figure out who he looked most like. He was accepted as Finnis's because Finnis and Nellie had married shortly before the boy's arrival. But Nellie had never been known for being very bright or very selective. The boy could as easily have been Luke's or even Isaac's own. Times, when Isaac looked into the boy's brown eyes, he thought he saw a reflection of himself looking back. That thought brought him a mixture of pleasure and sadness. The last thing he would want would be a son of his following after Finnis. The young'un wouldn't have a chance for any kind of upbringing. Jerked up would be all, not raised up. But there was damn little he could do about it, since Finnis considered the boy his own and would like as not kill anybody who suggested otherwise, or at least sick Luke on to do the killing for him. Being shy of one arm made Finnis depend on Luke for most of the dirty work. Luke had been born some shy on brains. Their mother had always said it was because their father had been dead drunk when Luke was conceived, but Isaac never thought that explanation held much water. Old Cyrus Blackwood had been dead drunk a lot. Isaac was the only one of the 3 brothers who ever stopped to wipe his feet on the rough floor of the dog run before he walked into the cabin. The dirt he tracked in wouldn't add much to what was already there, for Nellie was not any great shakes as a housekeeper. But the move was instinctive with him. He hated living in a hog wallow. Moreover, the noise would serve to alert his brothers and Nellie that he was coming. It kept Finnis or Luke from poking a rifle into his face as he opened the door, their usual greeting to any stranger who happened upon the place. A candle flickered on the rough table, and a fire burned low on the hearth where Nellie had fixed whatever passed for supper. He figured he'd already missed his and would have to take whatever he could find. In the glow, he could see that Luke's face was swollen a little. Finnis glowered at him from behind his thick black beard.
I'm surprised you seen fit to come home. I thought maybe them Lewises were so grateful for you bringing their cow home, they might ask you to stay and live with them.
How's your face, Luke?
It hurts. You didn't have no call to hit me so hard.
The way you come at me, I had to. When you ever gonna learn not to do everything Finnis tells you?
You know we needed that cow. These youngins ain't had no milk since our own cow up and left on us.
You ought to have better sense than to steal from a nigh neighbor. They'd have come over here and found that cow, and like as not, there'd have been a fight, and a fight can lead to a killing.
Yeah, it'd be fine with me. I wouldn't mind seeing one or two of them Lewises laying dead.
It might not have been them laying dead. Might have been one of us.
Isaac turned to Nellie, who stood over against a wall, washing the supper plates in a pan. She looked bigger than a 3-year-old heifer. He wondered how he could ever have brought himself to climb into bed with her. It had been a long time since he had.
Got anything left I can eat?
He ain't getting nothing, Nellie. He had no business whooping up on his brother that way.
Nellie just stared open-mouthed, confused by the contradictory signal she was receiving. Saying nothing, she kept rubbing an old cloth against the plates. Isaac took a plate and a spoon and went to the pots that sat on the hearth. He found there a remnant of squirrel stew and helped himself to it.
I told you there wasn't no supper here for you. You want to eat, you go back to your friends the Lewises.
Isaac looked his brother squarely in the eye.
You go to hell, Finnis!
There was nothing Finnis needed so badly as a good whipping, but Isaac had never brought himself to do that to a one-armed man. Isaac carried his plate out onto the dog run so he could eat in peace.
If I had a lick of sense, I'd just go off and leave them.
But the boy came and stared at Isaac while he ate, and Isaac knew there was at least one good reason he could never leave. The image of Annie Lewis crossed his mind. He couldn't help making a contrast between her and Nellie. That led him to an even broader contrast between the Lewis family and the Blackwoods. There had always been a closeness among the Lewises that had never existed among his own battling kin. He wished for just once in his life that he could experience that kind of closeness.
Come here to me, boy.
The boy simply shook his head, walked off into the yard, and picked up a rock and hurled it at Isaac.
Damn!
During the summer, James Lewis had no roof he could properly call his own. Andrew and Petra had intended to let him sleep with the children in one side of their double cabin, but Annie's unexpected presence had changed that plan. Annie slept in the room with the children. James slept on the ground outdoors most nights. He was accustomed to it because of the many hunting trips that had kept him in the woods for a night or more back home, and because he had rolled his blankets on the ground all the way to Texas from Tennessee. When the weather was benign, that suited him. The air was always better outside than in a cabin, even one where chinks between the logs let the wind find its way through. When it rained, he could either sleep on the dog run or climb up into the wagon and be protected by the canvas, still drawn down tightly over the wagon hoops. Andrew's black dog was slow at first in accepting James as a member of the family, but eventually began lying down beside James's blankets, keeping him company through the night. The first priority was planting. The families had to finish Michael's and Andrew's fields and break out enough land for Cousin Frank to raise a crop and a garden that would feed his family, their animals, and Hope's precious laying hens through the first winter. Because James was a bachelor without a family dependent on him, and Annie had been granted no land of her own, there was less urgency in their case. They could look to their brothers. The men and the three boys large enough to help combined their strengths, moving together from one farm to the other for the work. As Michael, Andrew, and Frank forced the wooden points of their plows into new ground on Frank's place, James and the boys followed behind, dropping seed into the freshly turned earth. Frank's two sons and Michael's Mordecai had not been long in cementing a solid friendship that went beyond their being blood kin. The two fresh arrivals from Tennessee were the only boys Mordecai had had around him near his own age. It was imperative that the crops be planted early enough to mature before frost bit them down. James remembered stories in the family from before his own time about his restless father Mordecai, ever itching to find new land, ever moving his wife and children without considering the length of the growing season. Sometimes only Michael's skill with the rifle had kept the family from going hungry through the long winters. With Michael at home, there had always been meat, even when there was no bread. James was curious about their neighbors, but saw little of them during those early weeks, for the neighbors had work of their own to do, work of the same urgency as the Lewises. Visiting would come later, when the crops were planted and the weeds hoed out. There would be a lull of sorts before the harvest. Not until this lull would James have time to do much about putting up a cabin for himself and his sister Annie. James had always heard it said that one kitchen was too small for two women. He wondered how Petra and Annie kept on good terms with one another in such close quarters. He never saw Annie display the snappish side of her nature to Andrew's wife. That seemed to be a sisterly trait reserved for James alone. Petra's English improved considerably through her constant association with Annie, and Annie picked up a smattering of Spanish. James figured it was probably just enough to get her misunderstood and into some kind of trouble if she ever found herself in need of it and nobody like Petra was around to translate. Hope's baby came along in due time. As if there weren't already women enough, Annie and Marie and Petra, plump Mrs. Willett, the Kentuckian, came over to provide midwife services. For a woman who displayed such a sweet and kindly face, it seemed to James that she could give an unreasonable number of orders and find an ungodly heap of things that the men ought to be doing to help. James decided it was time to see more meat hanging in the dog run, so he went off hunting for a couple of days. When he came back, he found the Frank Lewis family blessed with another boy. Times when Michael was around, James ached for conversation with him. But Michael had been taciturn back in Tennessee in those years after that first disastrous trip to Texas with his father. He was older now, lines starting to show in his face, but that dark, quiet manner still clung as it had in his youth. In the absence of talk, James watched. He tried to do as Michael did, to look as Michael looked. He found himself liking the Texas country more all the time. Listening to stories back home, he'd visualized a golden land teeming with wildlife and a soil so rich that you just scratched a spot in the earth, dropped a seed, and jumped back to keep from being struck by the fast-growing plant. The reality fell considerably short of that image, but it was good enough. The soil looked fine and dark, and it gave off a pleasant smell when the plow turned the original sod for the first time. Michael and Andrew agreed that the game was no longer as abundant as they had first found it, but James could only compare it to Tennessee. There, the land was increasingly crowded with people, and game was being killed off or driven away at a disturbing rate. Texas, this part of it anyhow, was still years away from reaching that point. West of the Lewis farms, where nobody yet lived, James could always find something to level his rifle sights on. He never failed to bring home meat. That kept Annie from lecturing him at length about his absence from the field. He took Michael's 8-year-old son Mordecai with him when Michael could spare the boy. James found the lean young Mordecai keen of eye and short on talk, just the way James liked for boys to be. Mordecai would respond politely if James initiated a conversation, but he seldom spoke first, except to draw James's attention to a deer or something else of interest. Annie could well take lessons from him, James thought. He felt the boy's eyes following him often, studying him, perhaps making some kind of appraisal, but never betraying the nature of it by word or expression. He had a solemn manner, much like the one James remembered in Michael back in the old days before Michael and Andrew had come to Texas. By the time Mordecai was grown, James thought he would be the spitting image of his father. Anybody with half an eye could already see that he was a Lewis. The family features were stamped strong and clean. The only thing different that James could see was that the boy's complexion was a little darker. Came from the Spanish on his mother's side, James figured. Mordecai often spotted game before James did. When James let him take the first shot, there was no need to reload for a second. Mordecai hit whatever he aimed at. Michael had trained him well. Or maybe it was in the blood, a legacy from the Tennessee grandfather whose name the boy bore. Though Mordecai didn't say much, James became aware that he could say it in either of three languages. He had French and Spanish from his mother, English from his father. James was in no position to judge how good the boy's French and Spanish were, because he'd not learned more than a dozen words of Spanish himself, and no French at all. But he noticed that when an occasional Mexican happened to ride by, Mordecai had no trouble talking with him.
It's all just noise to me. How do you know what you're saying?
Everything's got a name, and to me it's got three names. I'll bet I could teach you Spanish in a little while.
I don't know what use it'd be. Just about everybody I've seen in Texas talks English like I do.
But we belong to Mexico.
No, sir, I don't belong to nobody. Lord put me on this earth a free American.
You stopped being American when you came into Texas and taken up Mexican land. At least, that's what the law says.
I'll always be an American. They can come and throw me in jail if they can catch me, but it won't change what I am.
They might decide to come and try it if they hear you talking like that. Folks say there's some Mexican soldiers who moved in over at San Felipe. There's never been any there before, except just passing through.
I've got no quarrel with them. All they've got to do is let me alone.
But they get ants in their britches when they hear people talking like you do.
I come from Tennessee, and in Tennessee a man can say anything he wants to if he's stout enough to back it up.
You're not in Tennessee anymore.
I'll bet your daddy ain't afeard of no Mexican soldiers.
He ain't afeard of anybody, but soldiers always make him nervous. Mama says it's because they remind them of when Spanish soldiers killed my granddaddy. Mama says soldiers are trained how to kill people. That ain't being scared, that's just being watchful.
A wise man is always watchful. Still, I'll bet your daddy never ran from anybody looking for a fight.
He stays out of their way when he can, but I don't know as he ever turned and run from them.
Well, I ain't going to either. I'll say what I please wherever I please. Anybody that doesn't like me the way I am, he can go around. Us Lewises don't back off for anybody.
He thought he saw a positive response in the boy's eyes.
You ever been in jail?
Just once in Nacogdoches. Why?
Uncle Andrew says we'll probably have to go and get you out of jail one of these days.
They were in the midst of cutting corn that fall when the soldiers first came by. The Lewis men and the three boys were working in Andrew's field. He had planted earliest, so his corn was the first ready for harvest. They lopped the heads from the stalks and dropped the ears into long cotton bags dragged behind them. It was young Mordecai who first spotted the riders.
Dad, That's soldiers!
James counted six soldiers, mounted on small, ribby horses that didn't look as if they'd ever seen any corn, and not a lot of anything else. The unexpected appearance of the uniformed men caught Michael in mid-stride and seemed to stagger him a bit. James saw something in his older brother's eyes, a darkness he dimly remembered from a time back in Tennessee when the Blackwood family had put Michael under a threat of death that was a hazard to all the Lewises. Michael turned to Andrew.
They look like they're wanting something. You talk the language better than I do. Why don't you go down and see what they're after?
Sure. Probably just looking for directions to someplace.
Giving directions to someplace a long way from here.
I'll go with you, Andrew, in case of trouble.
Trouble? There won't be any trouble unless you're looking to start some, James.
I've never been one to cause trouble.
That's not what Annie says. You just let me do the talking.
James couldn't have done any talking if he'd wanted to, for the conversation was all in Spanish. He stood in awkward, confused silence, listening to Andrew and a couple of the soldiers, watching the elaborate movement of their hands as they augmented their words. James thought the visitors were a hard-looking lot, all eyeing Andrew's cabin as if they would like to see what was in it. Their uniforms were dirty and threadbare. One man was knife-scarred, two had misshapen noses, which James guessed had been broken fighting, and one was missing part of an ear. He wondered idly if it had been bitten off or sliced away with a knife. Neither way was much of a recommendation. He had seen better-looking men on a chain in a Tennessee prisoner-of-work gang. Though not a word had been said that James could understand, he had a strong feeling that Andrew was uneasy. A couple of times, one of the men pointed toward the cabin, and Andrew shook his head, pointing off in another direction. At last, the men turned their horses and rode away, down toward the river. Andrew leaned on the rail fence, watching them intently. James knew he had not been mistaken. Something about the soldiers had struck a raw nerve in his brother.
They had the uniforms, but they didn't look much like real soldiers to me. You think maybe there's something else?
They're soldiers, all right. But not the ones we're used to seeing around here. I'm afraid Zaragoza was right. He told me they were fixing to send convict soldiers up here to watch over us.
What did they want?
They asked how many people were settled in this part of the country and if we're the last ones to the west. But all the time they kept looking at the cabin. There hadn't been so many of us here. I expect they had a mind to rob it.
What are we gonna do?
Nothing much we can do. Maybe they won't come back.
James doubted that. He had seen for himself the way they looked toward the cabin. Andrew and Petra didn't have much, but even that little must look like a lot to someone who had nothing at all.
We can run them the hell off if they do show up here again.
You don't understand this country. Mexico's given us a lot, but it could take it all back. There's people down there, more than ready to try. They don't like us and never did. Zaragoza said that's why these convict soldiers are being sent, to see if we could be provoked into doing something that could give them the excuse.
They'll take more than the likes of what I just saw.
They've got more. Don't let anybody tell you different.
Andrew turned his attention back toward the river. The soldiers had watered their horses and were turning east in the direction of San Felipe. Andrew looked relieved.
Do me a favor, James. All Michael needs to know is that they asked for directions. If you thought there was more to it, well, you don't know Michael like I do.
I know. He'd fight.
There are times when the hardest fight a man has to face is with himself. Michael's been down that road too many times. One of these days he's liable to fight that fight and lose. Let's go head some more corn.
From the first, James had harbored reservations about his brother's wives. To his Tennessee ear, they both talked a little oddly, especially Petra, and they were darker complexioned than the women he had known back home. Times, he wondered why his brothers couldn't have gone back to Tennessee and found brides a little more like themselves. He guessed that when a man was in a foreign country, he accepted what that country offered. However, he had no complaint about the women's performance in the kitchen. When all the Lewis men worked together, the Lewis women did likewise. Put Annie, Hope, Marie, and Petra all in the same kitchen, and the only thing totally predictable was that something good to eat would come out of it, whether it was Mexican, French, or American. Both of his brother's wives were small women, shorter by half a head than Annie, and the constant work of a frontier existence had not let them put on any more weight than their small frames demanded. James thought he could almost reach around Marie's waist with his two hands, though he would not be so bold as to do it. Times he caught a sadness in her eyes, and he wondered if she might be thinking about the baby buried up the hill from her cabin. But other times she laughed, and her laugh was as clean and light as the tinkle of a silver bell. Petra was a quiet sort, but James seldom saw her looking sad. Whenever Andrew was around, her gaze would follow him, her dark eyes soft and loving. Andrew looked the same whenever he was around Petra. There was a contentment about that pair, one James wondered if he would ever find for himself. He often had a feeling that Michael had never quite found it. Michael could be darkly moody, though he always seemed to brighten when Marie put her hand on his arm or around his shoulder. James decided his brothers could have done worse, even if they had gone a long way from home to find their wives. But despite their example, he wasn't sure he ever wanted to marry. He might get somebody as easily dissatisfied as Annie and spend the rest of his life looking for reasons not to go home. Though the families worked together in daytime during the harvest, they went to their own homes at night, for they had cows to milk, chickens to tend, and hogs to feed. Andrew and James had caught up several of Andrew's free-running pigs from the woods and penned them to fatten on corn and whatever minor leavings the kitchen table might yield. Come winter's cold, the pigs would be converted into hams, bacon, and sausage. The hens ran free in the daytime, but at night they roosted within a tall picket enclosure as varmint-proof as Andrew had been able to make it. There were plenty of four-legged predators around which had a taste for chickens, or whatever else they could catch. It was the two-legged variety that started the trouble for James. One starry night he spread his blankets as usual some distance from the house. The black dog preferred the children's company in the daytime, but when they were put to bed in the cabin at night, the animal would join James, lying down beside him. The dog was company of sorts, though given to getting up in the night and running around a little, barking at any varmints he found prowling.
Shut up, dog! A wolf, or even a bear.
James reached for the long rifle he kept just beneath the edge of the blanket to protect it from morning's dew. He pushed to his bare feet and felt around for his boots. The dog moved out away from him a little, back arched. Nothing put up a noise like a pig caught and unable to break away. It had to be something bigger than a raccoon or even a coyote to grab hold of a half-grown pig. In his underwear, he held the rifle against the poor light of a quarter moon and primed it. Then he set off in a trot toward the sound of the squealing. He saw a dark form coming over the top rail of the hog pen and knew immediately that this was no wolf or bear. This was a man holding a kicking pig in his arms while he broke into a run.
Let go of that pig!
James could see that the man had no intention of turning the pig loose. He dropped to one knee, brought the heavy rifle to his shoulder, and tried to aim without being able to see the front sight clearly. Ah! The pig kicked free and went running desperately back toward the pen from which it had come. James reloaded the rifle. He could see the outlines of two horsemen riding away as hard as they could go. He saw no need to waste powder and ball on a second shot that would almost certainly miss. Besides, the pig had gotten loose.
James! James, what's the matter? What are you shooting at?
James turned and started back toward the cabin, though he took time to go buy his blankets and put on his trousers. He didn't intend for Petra to see him in his underwear. It would be an embarrassment to them both. Andrew came out to meet him.
You seen some varmint out there?
A pig stealing varmint. One that ran on two legs. Him and another one got away on horseback.
A man? You sure?
Didn't you hear him holler when I fired that shot? You ever see a four-legged varmint jump on a horse and run off?
By any chance, did he have just one arm?
No, I'm pretty sure he had two. Could have been one of the other two, though.
Luke, maybe, not Isaac. He's got his faults, but I doubt he'd stoop to pig stealing.
James could see the two women standing on the dog run. They were too far away to hear the conversation.
It might not have been the Blackwoods at all. Remember, we seen some of them convict soldiers pass by here this morning.
You don't suppose you hit them, do you?
I sure as hell tried. I'd have killed them if I could.
For a pig? Damn it, James, we reckon human life a little higher than that. If it was soldiers, We could be in for right smart trouble.
A man's got a right to protect himself from thieves.
Not when they're soldiers. If one of them shows up with a bullet in him, the law's gonna take his side and believe whatever story he wants to tell.
I'll bet Micah would have shot to kill.
For something important, maybe, not for a pig.
Maybe we better hope it was just the Blackwoods. The world could stand a few less of them anyway.
Though he and Andrew tried to make light of the matter, James could tell by the women's expressions that they were not fooled, especially Petra. Despite the men's casual recounting of the incident, which betrayed no concern, she shuddered. She could remember back to another time when Spanish soldiers had been the terror of the countryside, taking whatever they wanted, arbitrarily killing those their officers suspected might be sympathetic to the native Mexican movement against Spanish rule. They offered no trial, heard no evidence. They had murdered her father, who was one of their countrymen, just as they had murdered Mordecai Lewis, who was not.
Better, I think, if we gave them the pig. If we gave them all the pigs.
Petra's right in this matter.
You can't give in to a thief. The more he gets away with, the more he'll come back. That's how it was with the Blackwoods back home. We never did let them get away with anything.
Andrew put his arms around Petra and tried to hug the worry out of her.
Even if it was soldiers, chances are James didn't hit one of them. It was too dark to see good.
I hope I did, so they'll take roundings on this place from here out. They'll know there's light sleepers around here.
But it was not to be that way. Early the next morning, 7 soldiers rode up to the farm, the rising sun at their backs. Andrew and James were tending to the livestock before they went into the field to harvest corn. Michael, Frank, and the boys had not arrived to help.
I got my rifle over against the shed. I better fetch it.
No. Worst thing we could do would be to show them a weapon. Stand quiet and let me handle it.
James knew little about rank in the Mexican army, but one of the soldiers wore a bit more tattered finery than the others, so he figured him for an officer or something. To James, he looked no better than the men around him. It was hard to see much of his face because of a huge and menacing black mustache that seemed to cover almost everything except his dark eyes and the point of his chin. As to the hard-eyed men with him, James doubted their own mothers would claim them. Whoever had opened the prison gates and turned them loose upon the public had made a grievous mistake. Andrew said the man in the lead was a sergeant, the same rank as the one named Diaz, who had caused the immigrant Lewis's so much trouble west of the Sabine River. James didn't take the rank as any recommendation. Unlike Diaz, this one did not speak English, or at least gave no sign that he did. It was left to Andrew to do the talking in Spanish. James listened, trying in vain to catch a word here and there. The sergeant's expression was accusatory, and so was his tone of voice.
What's he saying?
He says they were camped little ways down the river last night. Says somebody taking a shot at one of his soldiers that was on outside guard and creased him across the shoulder. Doesn't exactly say so, but it's plain he figures one of us done it. He was asking if we'd seen anybody suspicious come by here.
We have, and they was all soldiers.
I told him we shot at something last night that tried to steal a pig. I didn't tell him we knew it was a man. I said it was dark and we thought it was probably a wolf or maybe a bear.
Like hell we did. I knew damn well what it was.
Sometimes, little brother, it pays to tell people what they want to hear, especially soldiers.
The sergeant evidently understood more than he let on, for he pointed to James.
¿Eres tú el que disparó el tiro?
What is it now?
He's asking if you're the one who fired the shot.
Tell him I did, and I'll do it again if I catch another wolf around here.
Andrew tried to soften the sense of it, but James could tell that the sergeant understood what he had said, enough at least to know his meaning. He saw angry challenge in the man's black eyes.
Tell him if he wants to fight about it to climb on down here.
I don't know how we're going to keep you alive long enough to ever make a crop on that place of yours.
I just don't like thieves, and this whole bunch looks to me like fugitives from a hanging.
The sergeant gave James a crackling look that said he would be back. James imagined he could feel the heat from the man's eyes, like the heat from coals banked for a long winter night. His men pulled their horses around and rode away, some turning in their saddles to look back. Andrew watched them a few minutes before he faced James with trouble in his eyes.
I'm sorry to say this, but it may have been a mistake for you to come to Texas.
If you think I'm afraid of a bunch of pig thieves like that, you're mistaken.
I know you're not. The thing is, you ought to be. If you halfway knew this country, you would be.
I'll bet Michael would have done the same thing. You couldn't catch him taking any sass off of them soldiers. Michael would stand up for himself.
Andrew just stared at him a moment, shook his head, and turned back to feeding the livestock. James felt his face warm, for he wanted his brother's approval. But devil be damned if he was going to back down from a bunch of convict soldiers to get it.